Good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining me for another episode of our Magnum Opus podcast. I have with us today a very, very esteemed guest, someone that I am so incredibly thankful has offered their time to talk with me today. I have the only harp instructor that I can think of and the only harp instructor at Opus, the wonderful, the amazing Nicole Young. So, Nicole, thank you so, so much for joining us today. We really appreciate you having here and giving us your time. Thank you for saying hey.
Thank you, Drew. I'm so excited to be here. I'm honored to be on your podcast.
Really, we were brainstorming some ideas. We're like, who should we talk to? And really, your name was just honestly at the top of the list, because who plays harp? Who can teach harp? Who performs on harp? It's just an awesome instrument. So speaking of how cool harp is, I wanted to kind of get the ball rolling and ask you, how did you get involved in music? And this is a really broad question, but I would love to kind of hear two answers. One, of course, is obviously what got you involved in music, if it was a memory or maybe a teacher. But secondly, what got you involved in the harp? Because it's such a unique instrument.
Yeah, well, when I was growing up, we had a piano in my house. I think it was my grandmother's old piano. She gave it to my dad, and my dad had taken piano lessons and accordion lessons when he was a little boy, and he never stuck with it. He would rather be outside playing with his brothers. So when he was older, he regretted that he had never pursued music, because he thought, as an adult, maybe I could have been good if I would have practiced a little more. So that was kind of important to him and my mom, that me and my sisters take piano lessons. So when I was 5 years old, I started on piano and I loved it. And when I was a little bit older, we went to an orchestra concert as a family, and that's where I first saw the harp. I saw it on stage and I thought, what is that? It's so beautiful. It was big. It was kind of sticking up over the orchestra, and it just had all these ornate carvings. And then I could hear the sound. I was watching the harpist play and I was mesmerized. It was kind of like love at first sight. I saw the instrument and I thought, I am going to play that someday. I don't know. As a child, I had no idea what the logistics would be to finding an instrument, to playing it, but I just knew. It was just like an intuition, I suppose. I'm going to play that instrument. And it just so happened that I grew up in this tiny little town in Illinois called Freeport, Illinois. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's the northwest corner. It's this little town.
Oh my gosh.
Teeny town. But their claim to fame is they had one of the oldest continuous public school orchestras in the country. And they had harp as part of the orchestra.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
It's amazing. Yeah, so the orchestra director, who was there, I think in the 1950s or 60s, he started fundraising because he wanted this to be a full orchestra with all the instruments. So he started fundraising for harps. And by the time I was in school, the school district had acquired 7 harps. Starting in fifth grade, we had little harps in our middle school. We had harp in the junior high and high school. So it was just one of the instruments you could sign up for when they're out recruiting for, hey, join band and orchestra in fifth grade. The harp was on the list, and I saw the harp on the list. I'm like, oh, wow, I want to play this. I already had seen it. I already knew, well, I'm going to play the harp, and then here's the opportunity. It was just kind of, I guess, magical, maybe a little. So I brought the sign-up sheet home. I'm like, Mom, Dad, I want to play the harp. And they said, sure. And they had no idea what I was about to get into. Looking back, I wonder. But they are so supportive and so thrilled that I played. I was just really lucky. My parents could never have afforded to, like, buy me a harp as a 10-year-old child. So I was really lucky that the school had the harps. I practiced at school. I was there during my lunch break. I was there before and after school practicing. They allowed me to take it home for the weekend.
Oh.
So I got all the way, I played the harp from fifth grade through 12th grade on the school instrument. And then at the end, when I was in high school about to graduate, I realized this is the end of my harp experience. Like, I don't think my parents are going to pay for harp. I have no money. I'm a child. So what am I going to do? And I thought, well, I love music. I'm not ready for this to be the end of this relationship, because I really love this instrument. So I decided, my harp teacher at the time said, Nicole, you could be a music major. You could. You're good. You know, you should audition for music school. So I thought, okay, I'll do that, because then my parents will be more apt to purchase a harp if I make it my career, in which it seemed lovely. My harp teacher, I thought it was interesting hearing about all of the gigs she did and all the performances that she played. So I thought, that seems fun, so I'll try. So I auditioned for several schools, and I thought, if I don't get into harp, I'm gonna go into art and be an art major, because I really liked art as well. But I got into school. I went to NIU for my undergraduate degree, and then I went on to Northwestern for my master's in harp, and I just stuck with it all this time, and I ended up getting a harp, and I still have, now I have four harps, and I'm like acquiring more. My goal is to have a fleet.
A fleet of harps,
yes. So anyway, that's a little bit how I got started.
Oh my gosh, to think having the option to start harp as young as fifth grade, I'm sure many of us out there, we picked the instrument that we did because that was what is available. And if we did orchestra, maybe because there was no band program, or maybe band because there was no orchestra, or even just we sang because there was no band or orchestra at that age, it definitely makes an impact. So I think that's absolutely amazing. Do you know if there's any other local areas that start harp as young as fifth grade?
There are harps in the Chicago area. So Yorkville High School has a harp. I know there's some harps, I think, in Naperville and some other school districts. I'd say the unique thing about the Freeport program that I was a part of was that you could go and you could be an orchestra as a harpist. A lot of other programs, you have to play violin as your first instrument, and maybe harp as your secondary, and they'll let you play if there's a piece with the harp. But in Freeport, you were a harpist. You showed up to class every day. You played the harp. If there wasn't a harp part, they gave you a violin part, says, play this on the harp. Or here's a piano part. So I got really good at adapting piano parts for harp, or just anything, because the teachers were lovely. They were like, do whatever you can to make this work. And there were a lot of us. We had three pedal harps in the high school orchestra, and all three of us played. Even if it's one harp part, we all played in unison. And sometimes there were extra harpists, and if there was nothing for them to do, sometimes we'd play triangle or help them out. But for the most part, we played harp the whole rehearsal and all the concerts.
Yeah.
So it was unique, so that we didn't have to play. We could play other instruments if we wanted to, but we could go in primarily as a harpist.
Gotcha.
And I think that was really effective.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you're a kid, I imagine that you don't start on the same harp that you do as an adult, one that is much bigger and very, very heavy and probably a lot more delicate. So can you talk to us a little bit about the different kinds of harps and maybe go into like some of those weird details, like how many strings it has and what you start on as like a baby harp or something like that?
Sure. Yes, I did not start on a full-size concert grand pedal harp. It would have knocked me off of my chair as a 10-year-old. So I started on a small harp. It's called a lever harp. I think the harp had about 34 strings. It was much smaller, about 4 to 5 feet tall. And so harps come in many different sizes, all the way from a lap-size harp that maybe has 26 strings to a floor harp that maybe has 34, all the way up to a full-size concert grand pedal harp that you play in orchestra is 47 strings, and it weighs about 85 pounds, and it's 6 feet tall. So we have the whole gamut of sizes of instruments. So I recommend students start on a lever harp, and that's a 34 string. They're smaller, they're more portable. You're probably wondering, what on earth is she talking about levers and pedals? Well, the harp, if you think of the strings of the harp like the white keys of the piano, to get any kind of sharps or flats, we have to change the pitch of the string. The reason we don't have all 88 keys of the piano, like that would be 88 strings, and our arms could not possibly reach that far. So they've, when they're designing the harp, they figured, oh, we can squish way more octaves into a smaller space if we have some of the strings do double duty or triple duty on different pitches. So a lever harp changes the pitch. There are sharping levers at the top of the string, so you raise the lever to raise the pitch by a half step. So you can get two sounds on every string. You get a natural sound or a sharp sound, or you can get, depending on how the harp's tuned, you can get a natural sound and a flat. So you only get two choices. And over time, so the first instruments, first harps that were ever created, didn't have any sharping levers. You just got the strings you had, that's it. So, you know, like ancient Egypts or all those harps, they would maybe tune the strings to be what they want, but then you're stuck with those pitches. You can't really do anything outside those scales that the harp's tuned to. And then over time, they started wanting the harp to be a little more chromatic. So like Irish harps, they've invented little sharping levers to change the pitch. And then as music evolved and became even more chromatic, especially in the West, the composers were feeling really restricted by not being able to do so much chromaticism. So a lot of inventors started brainstorming, trying to figure out ways to add more pitches to the harp. And they came up in the 1800s with a pedal mechanism. So it freed the harpist's hands to be able to play, and then we changed the pitch of the strings with our feet. So the fun thing about the pedals is now it enables us to get three sounds out of every string. So we can get sharp, natural, and flat out of every string. So we have way more versatility. So that's the difference between lever harp, pedal harp. The pedals change the pitch, and the lever harp, the levers will change the pitch.
Gotcha. Okay. So way back when, they were kind of restricted to just writing music in very specific keys just because they couldn't tune on the fly. So yeah, that makes sense that they're super restricted. Imagine just playing everything in C major, which, you know, as a musician, that sounds like a dream come true. But then again, you can't do too much else, no sharps, no flats. So do the levers kind of work like a piano, or I'm sorry, do the pedals kind of work like a piano pedal? Where you press it down on your foot, is it all on the right side? Are some on the right and the left? So you're like working all four limbs of your body to play the harp?
Yeah, good question. The pedals on the harp are nothing like piano pedals. So piano pedals, you know, you press down and press up. You have to hold the pedal down with your foot the whole time. And it is the damper pedal, so it makes the instrument reverberate or keep ringing. Right. Mm-hmm. On the harp, the pedals have nothing to do with reverb or sustain. It's just for pitch. So there are notches in the instrument. So you set the pedal and you can keep your foot off of it. Once you put it in place, you don't need to put your foot on it. There's three settings for every pedal. So it's like up, middle, and down. There's seven pedals. So it's three for the left foot and four for the right foot. And it's the pitches of the musical scale A, B, C, D, E, F, G. So we have an A pedal, a B pedal, a C pedal. So if we want a C sharp, we move our foot to the C pedal and we put it all the way into the bottom position, and that sharpens every C on the instrument.
Wow.
So we do play with two hands and 2 feet all the time. And depending on how crazy the music gets, our feet, we're dancing, and we have to choreograph the footwork. So if we have a measure where all of a sudden we have seven, you know, or five accidentals coming up in the next measure, we have to pre-plan where to move our feet because we only have 2 feet. We can't move five pedals in 1 second. We can only move two pedals at a time with left and right foot. So we have to kind of choreograph what we're about to do.
Oh my gosh. Gets
to be really, it's a workout sometimes. I wonder how many calories I burn on stuff, especially like music of Wagner. I don't know if you're familiar with Wagner's music, but it's notoriously chromatic, especially some of the orchestral and opera pieces. And we are dancing. There's an excerpt called The Magic Fire Music that's every harpist, we all have to learn it, and it is the most crazy footwork. It's just,
oh my gosh,
we are dancing.
Oh my gosh. You guys thought organ was difficult. No. Move over. The harp takes the cake. So we talked a little bit about the smaller harps, and forgive me, I forget the name already.
Lever?
Gotcha. Thank you. What might it cost? Can you rent a harp? Do you have to purchase one? Can you sort of like level up the sizes like on a violin? That's all included with rentals normally. What does that maybe look like?
Sure. There's some different options. Living in the Chicago area, there are a lot of harpists who have extra harps that they rent out to students. So that's a good place to look. You can always check with your harp teacher and see if they know of any harps that are available to rent in the area. And the other place that's amazing, living in the Chicago area, Chicago is home to the biggest harp company in the world, Lyon & Healy Harps. They are made right down on Ogden and Lake. That is a great place. They do rental harps there. They also have something called the Bounty Program, where you can rent a lever harp or purchase a lever harp. And then within 5 years, if you want to purchase a larger harp, they will let you trade it in for its full value towards your next harp.
Wow.
You can keep moving up in harps. And that is really how a lot of people do it, because to purchase a pedal harp outright is very expensive. It's like buying a new car.
Right. Yes.
You can level up that way.
Okay. What was the name of the company again?
Lyon & Healy.
Lyon & Healy. I am definitely, I got to write that down for whenever I get the chance to play harp.
And if you're interested, Lyon & Healy does factory tours for the public.
Oh, wow.
You just have to contact them. They do them at noon. It is fabulous. If you have a chance to go, they make everything by hand, and they will walk you through all the different floors. So you go to the first floor, they're doing something, and by the time you get to the top level of the building, you get to see the finished harp, and they have a beautiful showroom with lots and lots of harps. It's really fabulous, especially if you have any interest in like woodworking or just seeing how instruments are put together.
Just seeing how strings
are fabulous.
I will contact Linda Yu. We're going to make that our new annual Opus field trip. So it's in the works.
Oh, that would be great.
Let's kind of turn the page a little bit here and start talking about, you mentioned Richard Wagner a little bit earlier. My next question for you is, first of all, do you like playing in chamber music more or maybe full orchestra? Because it sounds like you've had experience with both. And I know playing harp can be, maybe it's like two different worlds. You have to play extra loud in orchestra because you're unique in the fact that you are usually the only harp player, whether it's chamber or a full orchestra. So what's kind of the difference for you? And do you have a preference between the two styles?
Oh, that's hard. I think I love both because there's just two, different aspects to both of playing. Like you said, with orchestra, you have to play very loud, especially if you're trying to cut 80-piece orchestra. And a lot of times we are the only harp on stage unless the composer wrote for two harps. Wagner wrote for four harps in some of his operas because the instrumentation is so thick that the only way the harp will be heard is if there's four players playing. But most of the time there's only one harp, so you have to play loudly. Another thing with orchestral music is the harp is not always busy the whole piece. Sometimes I'm counting rests for 10 minutes just to play eight bars. And then you don't want to miss your entrance.
Oh my gosh.
But I do love, but orchestra piece, the repertoire is just gorgeous. And it is really fascinating to discover how each composer incorporates the harp into their piece. And then sometimes I am, doubling the woodwinds, or sometimes I'm soloing, or sometimes I'm with the strings. And it's really interesting how the harp is woven into different orchestral settings. But with chamber music, I guess the thing about chamber music that I really love is that as a musician, you have a lot of individual responsibility and freedom and creativity within a piece. in orchestral playing, the conductor does a lot of the decisions and leads, the tempos and the balance, and kind of putting it together, the piece as a whole. You come to orchestra, you have to know your part very, very well, and you need to know, like, how you fit in with the orchestra. But overall, like, you don't have to know what the triangle player is playing unless you're like playing with them, or what the cellos are doing. Like, you should have an awareness of what it is. But with chamber music, you have to know all the other parts in your ensemble and in your piece, as well as you know your own, so that you can all work together in guiding, like, where the tempos are going to go, where the dynamics are going. And to anticipate what the other players are doing with their phrase so that you can respond to it. So you have a lot more, I guess, expressive freedoms right there. So I love that about chamber music. And then also the repertoire, again, like how the composers weave the instruments together.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And I can't believe I forgot to ask this earlier when we talked about how the harp is made, but I think one of the things that might be intimidating to younger players is actually playing the harp. And we talked about how you're often using two hands and two feet to play, which in itself is very, very difficult. But we don't start that way. I think normally we might just start with two hands. But my question for you is, does it hurt your fingers? Do you get very strong calluses? Was there maybe like a time when you practiced so much that your hand was just in pain? Because I think a lot of students watch harp players and wonder, how can they pluck those strings, even with their pinky fingers, and not just be hurting all the time?
Yeah. Well, first off, a fun fact, we only use four fingers to play the harp. We actually don't even use our pinky because...
Oh, sorry.
No. Well, the pinky is so tiny that it would hurt your hand to play using your pinky, which is the reason we don't, because it would hurt, actually end up, you might sprain your wrist. So over time, they've discovered that this finger doesn't work.
Gotcha.
But otherwise, the strings are softer than you might think. It's not like a violin where, you know, if you were plucking a violin all day, I'm assuming like that might be pretty sharp on your fingertips.
Yeah.
The harp strings are made out of nylon or gut for the most part, except for the bass wires are thicker. So if you were playing the bass wires all day, the very, very lowest strings on the harp, you might get some blisters. I do get calluses, especially on my left hand, because that's the hand that's playing all the bass wires. I actually, crazy thing, I file the calluses off.
Oh.
I try to keep, otherwise, like, sometimes the callus gets so big that my finger kind of catches on the string, and then I can get a blister. So I keep the finger pretty smooth. As far as blisters go, I've not really had blisters. I've maybe had two or three blisters in my whole life. Don't worry about it. It happens, if you're not used to practicing and you just suddenly play the harp for 5 hours and you've never played before, yeah, you might get a blister. But overall, I haven't had too many. It's not so bad on your fingers. As far as like hands hurting when you play, if your hands are hurting, you're probably not playing correctly. So relaxation helps, keeping your fingers and arms relaxed helps a lot. So
perfect.
I think don't be intimidated by thinking you're going to be in pain when you play.
Awesome.
It's not too painful. I'd say the most thing that gets sore is my shoulders get sore from holding my arms up.
Oh, sure.
Kind of like blow drying your hair for 30 minutes. Your arms can get a little tired, so you just kind of like hang your arms down and rest a little bit. But it is not that painful, so don't be afraid to play.
Okay, perfect. All right, everybody, you have no excuse now. We want everybody to enroll in
harp. That's right.
Now, speaking of, why don't we hear a little bit of it? If we've talked so much about how to play it and where it's made, why don't we listen to a couple things? So I know you had a few pieces. What was one that you wanted to start with? And maybe tell us a little bit about it. Is this you playing? How was it to play?
Sure.
Just a little background.
So, well, I have selected some chamber music that I performed. It was fun going through my archives of recordings for this podcast. I was like, oh, I remember that. Oh, that's fun to listen back. So this is one of my favorite chamber pieces for the harp. It's like a real treasure in harp repertoire. This is from Debussy's Sonata for Flute, Viola, and Harp. And this piece is amazing. Debussy was going to write a set of six sonatas using different instruments. And this is the third sonata. He actually passed away before he could finish this project, and we're really, really lucky as harpists that he finished this piece. So it's really one of the best pieces in the harp repertoire. What I love about it is how he uses the flute, viola, and harp equally. A lot of times in chamber music, the harp is more of an accompanist with solo instruments, and in this piece, all the instruments are equal, and the way he blends the instruments together is like a painting. He'll have the flute playing something, and then the viola will sneak in and blend right in with the flute in unison, and then go off on another line, and then the harp will come in, and it's all woven together so beautifully. So yeah, we can take a listen. This is the first movement, the pastoral, and if you listen to the very beginning of the piece, you're going to hear the harp enters first, and then the flute comes in, and then the viola sneaks in a little later. And but listen to how lovely it blends with the flute and then goes off on another line.
Gosh, you weren't kidding. There was a moment there where I think the flute was holding a note and then the violin just seamlessly entered on that same note. That was eerie. It gave me goosebumps. That was very, very cool.
Yeah, it was just really beautiful. And this happens throughout this entire piece. There's three movements and it's like this all over. And then sometimes the viola and the harp will be combined, so like the harp will be playing and then the viola will start plucking to blend in with the harp sound and then take off on a new area. So that's a little bit of the first movement. If you want, we can check out the second movement. There's some beautiful harp moments. If you can check at 3:40, The harp, there's a harp solo that comes in. You can hear what the harp sounds like.
Thank you.
Whoa. Okay. Not to be... I heard that piece, and I think when the heart came in, that I think what we all think of when we think harp, we hear that, not to say stereotypical, but we hear that sound, and it's almost associated with, like, you remembering something from your distant past, because it's mysterious and it's eerie, and that was very, very cool. I liked that a lot.
Yes, that's one of my favorite moments in the piece. It's just, finally we hear that sound that everyone's waiting for. And it sounds like I'm playing a glissando, but that's not a glissando. It's actually arpeggios, very, very fast,
oh,
the way
wow.
he wrote it. So it, yeah, it's an interesting way to write that. So this next piece is another one of my favorites. So Debussy is just gorgeous. This is another piece by a French composer, Jacques Ibert. He wrote a trio for violin, cello, and harp. It's a little bit lesser known than the Debussy, but it's so fun to play. It's challenging in the fact that there are so many notes for all the players. And every player, it's difficult for everyone. Sometimes in chamber music, you may find a piece where one instrument has an easy part and the rest of the other players are really working hard. But in the Ibert and also in the Debussy, all of the parts are equally as difficult. The Debussy is more challenging, like, musically. You have to work as a group and learn how to communicate and figure out what you're going to do with your expression and phrasing. And then with the Ibert, it's difficult because there are so many notes. It's just a lot of notes. It has to line up. And then intonation between the violin and cello is a little tricky because they have so many things that are just going in harmony. So this is the first movement, the Allegro Tranquillo. It's really fun. It's playful. It's really a joy to play.
Oh, you got me excited. You said the word lots of notes, and I was like,
lots
yes,
of notes.
Let's hear it. Wow, that one was hard to pause. I'm not going to lie. It was very cool. It just kept flowing and flowing. And I was like, I don't want to click, but I had to.
Yeah, it's very exciting. So the first movement's super joyful and playful. And then the second movement is so a different color. It's very kind of sad, very passionate. The harp is more an accompanist in this movement, and the violin and cello have these two intertwining melodies. It almost seems like two people are having a conversation and going back and forth. And then the interesting part about the second movement is the meter. The harp sounds like it's in 6/8, but the violin and the cello sound like they're in 3/4. So you have this nice, like, contrast. So I don't know if you want to listen to the second movement at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, again, wow, just a beautiful violin melody at the end. I really appreciate, you can hear the harp adds almost a percussive sense that really nicely augments even just the violin and the cello when everything is just so legato and smooth, and then you have this underlying yum bum bum bum, just like a plunking sound, which just flows really, really nice. It's good use.
Yeah, it's very beautifully written. And all right, so this is the third movement of the trio for violin, cello, and harp. And this movement is very, very fast. It's scherzando. Lots of notes for everybody, and it's just like a race to the finish line. It's so much fun.
Okay, give me a second while I pick my job off the floor. That was definitely, that was something that if you're not intrigued to play harp, listen to that and you just go, wow, that's an instrument that I want to learn.
Yeah, that one is a lot of fun. That movement always reminds me of a giant game of tag. So it's really interesting. So like you get the cello and violin are running off and it's like the harp's doing its thing. It's like, and then sometimes the harp and cello teams up and the violinist is running off. And then sometimes the violin and cello or violin and harp are doing something and the cellist is going. So it's just, they're all just swimming around and running around. It's just like very frolicking and playful.
Then the harp wins. She
catches the ball. Yeah, right. Harp always wins.
Well, I am very, very thankful to have all the time with you that we had and all this listening that we did and to learn all these super cool things about harp. We are very, very excited because this summer is going to be our Opus 20th anniversary gala. So we're kind of opening up all the doors here. So we're doing another flash mob. We have all these cool activities. And so if anyone is interested in learning harp, try it. Go for it this August. Nicole loves teaching new, younger students. And really, even if you have no experience, it's a 1 week long camp. We would love to see new players there. Even if you play violin or bass or flute and you want to try harp, let's do it. So my last question for you, Nicole, what is one thing that you are excited about in this upcoming 20th anniversary gala?
Oh, I am excited to see all of the performers that are going to be coming. It's always great to meet more musicians and to be able to work together. So I'm seeing all the enthusiastic campers come, and it's just such a rewarding week, especially at the end of the week when we put the concert on. It's always just, I'm so proud of all of the students because they work so hard for the whole week, and it's amazing to see it all come together and see.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
So excited.
Lots and lots of growth. And I think it's going to be really, really amazing to hear everybody on that stage again, as opposed to our virtual clippings together. So that's one thing that we're just incredibly, incredibly ready for. Thank you so, so much for joining us today. Thank you for offering your ear and your insight on your wonderful instrument. And we will see you very, very soon in that first week of August. Thank you again, Nicole.
Thank you, Drew. Good to see you. Have a great day.